Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 179 of the Beyond 90 podcast. It's our final podcast for 2023. What a year it's been. That's quite the understatement. We'll take you through our favorite memories from 2023 later on in the podcast, but firstly, have to introduce my co-hosts. So I have Majella Card and Dell Roots with me. I think we're all a little bit heavier, or possibly a lot heavier after Christmas meals. Emphatic nod from Dale, but that's okay. That's what we expected. Fingers crossed, Emma Burke can join us later on, but she is making her way back from Swan Street because we are recording this right straight after a very eventful game between Melbourne City and Brisbane Roar, which we will also discuss in a moment. But firstly, I have to ask how my co-hosts are doing. Firstly, Madge, you went up to Caloundra, so how was that?
Yeah, it was good fun. Had beach, then food, then beach. So can't complain. And I had chocolate for breakfast because that's basically all I now have in my house since I came home from just all of the Christmas giving. There's too much chocolate. So what else will you do? Just have it for breakfast.
It's one way to solve the problem of too much chocolate is to
Yeah,
eat the chocolate. So
that's
yes, modern problems require modern solutions, Madge. Did, by the way, you said beach, then food, then beach. Did you also have food at the beach?
Had a brewski at the beach,
Nice.
but that was about it. Yeah,
Yep.
it's like, you know,
Sounds fantastic.
sand and proper food doesn't mix.
No.
Good point.
Correct.
And Dale, you went down to Canberra as well, because of course that is where you're from. So how was that be?
Definitely no beach down there. Unfortunately, no beach. But yeah, significant amount of overeating, which, was probably to my detriment and to the detriment of my tailor. But yeah, it was lovely. Got to see the family. It's the first time I've been down there in about a month, I think. So yeah, it was good to get down. Good to get back though. It was Christmas at my house, being I guess what you'd say was a blended family, is quite the undertaking. We had 3 days back to back to back. So
Ooh.
yeah, very happy to be back and eating salad for once.
Yes. Yes. This is like one of the few times a year I'm actually glad to see a salad. And because, yes, as for my Christmas, well, of course, the regular listeners will know that my family's from the Philippines. And if you've ever seen a Filipino family gathering, you will know that it would have been like Dale's 3 days of eating condensed into one day in one house with so much talking. But I've just about survived that. Now, this week's featured Matilda, very, very popular. That's the player sometimes known as Ribbons, cap 179, is Hayley Rasso. Matilda's debut in 2012, her grassroots club, shout out to Benora Point Junior Soccer Club. Now, I suppose that technically means Hayley Rasso is a New South Wales footballer, but I mean, she feels very Queensland to me. 82 caps for the Matildas, 15 goals for Hayley, and of course, she is known for flying up and down the wing. Now, Rasso's an ex-Raw player, actually an ex-Canberra player as well. So good to have Madge and Dale on the pod for this. But I think she feels more Queensland to me. So we'll start with Madge. What's the first thing you think of when you think of Hayley Rasso?
Like a psychotic cannonball.
We may have our title.
Honestly, it is that, like, it's the way that she plays. She plays with no fear, and I think what's been she's always had that physicality to her. I mean, we know she had that awful back injury, which then made every, like, when she came back from that back injury, seeing her continue to play the way that she plays was always a bit heart and mouth. And I think then we've gotten past that now. But
Yeah.
I think what's been amazing about her recent form and her recent elevation to her game is that I think she's really been able to bring that goal scoring ability and finishing sort of up a little bit more and sort of develop that part of her game to make her a real a more rounded sort of attacking threat. But yeah, I'm thinking back to, I feel like it was the Olympics, her like battles against someone like Lauren Hemp. Just like she's the type of player that will relish a battle against an opposition player, and she's always just so fun to watch and entertaining, and I think every team that you see her go to, she's usually quite the favorite because she is such a character and such an entertaining player to watch on the field. And she's a player that you know is always giving 100% because she puts her full body into it. And yeah, it's great to see. And it's great to see her really kick on to over in Europe and see her sort of go from, you know, from Everton to City, where, you know, she unfortunately didn't get the game time that we think that she deserved. But then, yeah, now getting over to Madrid. Fabulous career so far and hopefully quite a few more years to go yet.
Yeah, yes. Hayley Raso is 29, so yeah, there should be a lot of years left in her career for sure, Madge. And also for Dale, I'm just looking at a Wikipedia page. Is she the only person to play for both Canberra United and Everton? Your two teams?
She must be pretty close. Yeah. We'd have to go back a long way, back to when Everton were a powerhouse in English football, in English women's football. Yeah, she must be. But yeah, I mean, she was her first years with Canberra was the year that Canberra went undefeated. She played in the grand final as well. And yeah, I think seeing her, my understanding is that she only went to Canberra because she couldn't get a go at QAS, and kind of wanted to step up and become a better footballer. And that was only at the age of like 16 or 17. So she was very, very raw at that point, if you'll pardon the pun, before she went to Brisbane. And I think her going to Brisbane straight from Canberra was probably a much better for her in terms of, I mean, mental health is the wrong word, but the familiarity around the place, having grown up in the Gold Coast. But yeah, it's just been, as you say, Madge, like watching her kick on from Brisbane, her first in at Brisbane, to then go and play in the States. She was Rose City Riveters' most valuable player the year before she hurt herself. And then, yeah, she's kicked on to cross to the WSL and now at Madrid. So I think she's one of those players that has really fought to find herself a space within the team. It reminds me of kind of similar to Caitlin Ford in that she was so often used as she was initially a wing back and then she was a winger, and now she kind of plays up front in a two. She can play in the hole behind the striker. Same kind of thing with Raso. Like, she's played as a wing back for a while. She's played as a striker for a while. She's really found herself as a wide player, and not just obviously because of her pace, but because of her ability to set up a pass, but her crossing ability is quite nice as well. Yeah, as you say, I think psychotic cannonball is definitely one way of looking at it. She does not play the way that I would tell my daughter to play if I was a concerned parent watching my daughter play football. But as she is a professional athlete, she does have access to the best health insurance. So I feel like that may have something to do with my decision, or my description rather. But yeah, I mean, there are very few players like Hayley Raso, and it's not necessarily just that she's one of the fastest players in the world, but she combines kind of the tenacity of like a Katie McCabe with the pace of Salma Paraluelo, and the finishing ability of some of the better midfielders in the world as well. I mean, City not playing her for as many games as they should have over the two seasons that she was there was just diabolical. But
yeah,
you know, we talk quite a lot. She played as many only a handful more games at City in two seasons as she did at Everton in one. So it just doesn't really make sense to me. But yeah, she's give it a few years. If she wins a trophy with Australia, I think she'll go down as one of the greats, to be honest.
Yeah, I totally agree. And just looking at a Wikipedia page, just a reminder of how transient the club careers of our top players used to be. Mm. It goes Canberra United, Brisbane Roar, Washington Spirit, Melbourne Victory, a 3-year stint at Portland Thorns, interspersed in that seasons at Canberra United and Brisbane Roar, then a permanent deal to Brisbane Roar, then Everton, then Manchester City, and now Real Madrid. And she is not yet 30, as I said. Yeah. So if you are new to the world of women's football, yeah, this is what used to happen to all of our top players. And yeah, thank God it does not anymore. Thank God they don't have to do the A-League women and NWSL NWSL switching thing. So that's, and that's better for the player welfare thing. I'm also glad, well, I'm not glad that it happened, but it's good for Madge to remind us of that awful back injury Hayley Russo suffered. I think, was it playing for Spirit?
Or no, it was playing for Portland.
Thorns. Yeah, where, three fractured vertebrae. And in fact, a link in the show notes to either the first or the second feature article Beyond 90 ever published, which was an interview with Renee Sweeting, Hayley's mother, who basically tells the story of Hayley's recovery from that awful injury. I was lucky enough to be at Leichhardt Oval for her first goal for the Matildas after recovering. It was a really special moment. And yeah, like you, from everything Madge and Dale have said, you could see why she's so popular. I also particularly like it when Hayley Russo and Ellie Carpenter are playing on the same side of the field for the Matildas. It's very distinctive, especially Russo with the rolled up sleeves and the ribbon and the two of them just going up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down the flank all game. Lots of fun to watch. Yep. But yes, here's to more, many more great footballing years for Hayley. And who knows, maybe she might jag a couple of trophies before she hangs up the boots. Now, as I said, this is being recorded straight after an A-League women game, and it was a game where a lot happened. Melbourne City 5, Brisbane Roar 3. Roar took the lead early on. Then there was an Amina Ekic hat-trick. Roar wouldn't go away, but City ending up nabbing all 3 points. So at the time recording, 6 points clear at the top, Melbourne City. And Madge, we both watched this, but obviously you are the Roar fan. So your takes from the game?
Oh, yeah, you know, just getting my hopes up. Sort of a very, very bright start from the Roar, actually. They sort of came out of the blocks really positively. Tamika Yallop, I think, probably for that whole game, but I think maybe had the best game that she's had back in the league this season, I think. She was really busy across the game. It was nice to see some attacking spark from Brisbane, but there were some... on both sides, you know, some defensive howlers there as well, a couple of nice set pieces as well, but you know, City I think just just had that the quality finishes. Brisbane you know had chances, but yeah, again, just I think they were just the quality of those chances were sometimes I think just lacking compared to some of the City ones. So look, I mean, like the commentary kept on saying, it's like Brisbane are still building with a new coach, starting to see signs of life over the last couple of games. It's been looking a little bit more coherent, like the Sydney game, this game as well, compared to the first few games under Alex Smith's coaching. So positive signs, but it's still a lot of games to sort of not get the results that you're wanting. And in mid-season, we're now getting to well into the season. And this, are we in the second half of the season?
Not yet.
We will be after the new year. We're close to it.
Yeah. So, but again, you're playing against Melbourne City, top of the table. They're top of the table for a reason. So they're, you know, a quality team. So I don't think it's a disgraceful result for Brisbane. Showing signs of life. And hopefully they can keep building, but yeah, City are just, you know, having that little bit of extra quality, I think, at the end of the day, getting them over well and truly over the line.
Yeah, and of course, Amina Ekic backing that up from scoring the winner in the Melbourne derby. But yeah, Brisbane didn't win, but there's now a whole game's worth of footage in perhaps how City can be exploited, because Brisbane were getting a lot of joy with the high press. So it'd be interesting to see the next few games for City and how their opponents, I think they got Adelaide away next, how they choose to approach games against Melbourne City. But yeah, just it's like we've already had all our Christmas presents. We got an 8-goal thriller as well, but like, if you like defending, don't watch this game.
Yeah, this wasn't the this wasn't the game for you, definitely.
No.
I mean, like, City have been pretty porous at the back for most of the season. Like, they've conceded 17 goals, which is only Brisbane and Brisbane, Adelaide, and Canberra have conceded more than that. And yes, they've scored more than everybody, and yes, they have a positive goal difference. Yeah. But like, scoring or conceding 17 goals in only 10 games and being top of the league is if I was Dario Vidicic, I wouldn't be very happy with that. And yeah, as you say, there were a few moments where City were just pressed. And there's just one poor pass, like playing out of the back. Play one poor pass and you're already in trouble. So as you say, if Adelaide can kind of get their house in order, then hopefully they can trouble them a little bit.
Yeah. Also, one moment, the keeper, Lisian Prue, got tackled by Tamiki Yallop and then they were bailed out by a goal line clearance. So
yeah,
it's against better teams that...
I must say, Tegan Thompson's penalty, one of the worst tackles I've ever seen. Ooh. Just an absolute honker. Just
not violent, just...
Completely
Danielle Gallagher's going nowhere. Just
yeah, just might just run you off the road. But yeah, you know, they'll learn.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think Tegan Thompson's her first full season with Brisbane.
Yeah,
it?
She was an injury. I had a few injury replacement games last season. Yeah.
Yes. And they're only 1 point off the finals at this point. So and yes, Sydney have got to play two fewer games, but still they're only 1 point off the finals.
Yeah. And of course the joy of it's what we've been campaigning for all these years, longer season.
And the other positive is I thought Deborah and Della Harp looked good. So that was, you know, I think that's been, losing Chelsea Blissett, I think after she had a fantastic start to the season, was a big loss for Brisbane. But then bringing in that sort of recruit, has really helped and getting her first game. And, you know, of course, seeing Mary Ellicker back in getting some game time after coming back from pretty much the year recovery from her ACL is also positive signs for Brisbane. And I think in the Raw did say that there should be an announcement of another midfielder, which one would hope will come in the January transfer window. But we'll see. We'll see what that might look like.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Yeah, for Raw, 12 games left, which used to be the length of the whole season.
Yeah.
So
heaps of time. Yeah. Nothing to worry about.
Yeah. It's like, you know, it put your pitchforks away, Raw fans. There's
four wins off the top of the league. Nothing to worry about.
Nothing to worry about. Now, I think I hesitate to throw to you for this, Dale, but Canberra United 0, Central Coast Mariners 3. I don't know what you think, but to some extent, they're a bit unlucky to come up against Uruguay in that kind of form, especially the first goal, which was an absolute bomb.
Yeah, both of Uruguay's goals were fantastic. I don't think you can this is one of those results where you're just like, oh, well, we had a bad day at the office. I think we kind of missed. I think Coco Mastorovic did as well as she could. She didn't have any howlers, but I think we lacked a little bit of leadership in Chloe Lincoln, although. Not having your goalkeeper sent off is generally a good thing. So props to Coco for that. But yeah, as you said, I mean, like Canberra had the chances. They had a number of really good opportunities and then they just couldn't put the, well, they had that one Heyman goal, which I think was quite early in the game, had caught offside. And then, yeah, Ogamal just kind of went to work and we couldn't kind of get our foot back in the door, unfortunately. We had more shots on goal. I think we had more possession and just couldn't do much with it. But yeah, it's still only one win this season. Plenty of games to go. Canberra have only played 7 games. So there's still three behind the rest of the pack. So again, only 3 wins off the finals with all those 3 games in hand. Anything is possible. In the words of Kevin Garnett, anything is possible.
That is an excellent reference, Dale. In fact, one of those catch-up games, it's in less than a week's time. Sydney versus Canberra United. Wednesday, 3rd of January.
That is the 3rd at the 8th Wonder of the World.
I assume I'll
say also, on Uruguay, she's been good fun. Yeah. She's in all of her games, she's got a bit of dark arts sort of fun about it. She's been good fun to watch. So I think she's been a great pickup for the Mariners this season.
Yeah, it is the key. How well do you scout your visa players?
I mean, they had 12 years to scout visa players. they couldn't have gone wrong, surely. And they, as I said to you guys pre-record, they've still got Casey Dumont on the bench. So, they've got a pretty stacked goalkeeping roster there. And not to say that Sarah Langman isn't doing a great job, because she definitely is, but you know, if times get tough, then there's someone on the bench.
Yeah, someone, a multiple A League Women champion on the bench,
yeah,
no less. Yeah, so just we've got to run through the round 9 results. My God, the games come quick and fast at this time of year. But previously to the round that started tonight, round 9, Melbourne City 1, Melbourne Victory 0. And a game that finished 1-0, but with the amount of chances for both teams, could also finish 4-4. It was absolutely wild derby, the kind of thing, well, the kind of thing you want to see when you're watching a derby, especially if you're a neutral. Although I suspect Emma would have basically spent 90 minutes, well, plus a bit, a little bit more, just completely stressed out with what was happening. I was also in attendance for Western City Wanderers 0, Adelaide United 1. This is, I like away victories, and this is like a really, almost my favorite type of away victory that Adelaide had. Score early, really early for Dylan Holmes, second minute, and just manage the rest of the game. And I mean, is 1-0 is never really comfortable, but they saw it out, and they, you know, they did pretty good job, all things you'd have to say, especially being the interstate away team. I thought Adelaide United were kind of showing some of the form that they did when they made the finals a couple of years ago. And then Dale, did you catch much of City 1 Brisbane 1 at the 8th Wonder of the World, as you said?
I did not, unfortunately.
Well, I was there, but I don't know what Madge remembers of it, but yeah, just a goal each in the first half. By the way, lovely goal from Ashley Brodigan. I think that's her first.
That's what
Brisbane
I remember.
Goal.
I was very happy, because yes. I feel like it feels like a long time since we've scored a goal like that. So yeah, that was just like surprising and very pleasant. I enjoyed it.
Yep. I was there. The ball was passed to Ashley Brodigan, and I was thinking, Sydney should close it down. They didn't. And then the ball flew past Jada Wyman. I'm like, well,
yeah.
that's a lesson for next time. But
yeah,
yeah.
And I think in general,
it was Courtney Vine's first start, I think, of the season. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah, and I think from a Brisbane point of view, I think it was probably the first game where I was like, oh, okay, something's building. They're getting used to the new system that's coming in. So yeah, I thought Brisbane did well. So it was probably a fair 1-1 draw, I think, in the end.
Yeah, I mean, in Brisbane's situation, you're not exactly going to say away at the defending champions is must win. So I would have thought,
that's a
very good point. I mean, Courtney Vine's first start for the season, and the kids got what they wanted with a Courtney Vine goal. Well, a good setup work from Kirsty Fenton in the build-up. I was like, it was a tough ask for Brisbane this game, like basically almost like a boxer trying to fight one-handed, because they could really only attack down one side of the field, because every time they went down their left, Tori Toomuth just took the ball off them. So, you know, it's, well, I mean, everyone's going to find that out this season when they play Sydney. And also, speaking of defenders doing well, Wellington Phoenix 2, Newcastle Jets 0. Now, the sensible take from this is it's the first game after the end of Emily Van Egmond's guest stint, so obviously drop in attacking performance, although Lauren Allen had flashes of good stuff, as she usually does. But I'm not here for sensible takes. I'm here to say that Serena Bolden, your World Cup star, your Philippines all-time leading scorer, got stuck, took a 90-minute ride in Mackenzie Barry's pocket, and she barely had a sniff. And that's really what I wanted to see. And that was the early Christmas present for me. But also, more seriously, Mariana Speckmeyer looking good. I think Paul Temple changed it up to play her more on the left wing instead of as a starting position, instead of her being center forward and then just drifting out to the wing anyway. And yeah, like, also great penalty from Speckmeyer deciding to kick the cover off the ball. And also, I think she set up the second goal as well for Hope Breslin. So yeah, then Wellington saw it out, and it's finally, they've had talented defenders, but now they're actually keeping clean sheets as well. So look, things are looking up.
I think having Speckmeyer there as well, as you say, is like, not only, I think last season, as you say, they had a number of good performances, but they couldn't finish. They couldn't kind of, defended relatively well, but they just couldn't keep the ball. And now that they've got Speckmeyer, who is a genuine player, They're third at the moment. There's no reason why we shouldn't be expecting them to make the finals at this point. Oh, they would need a catastrophic collapse at this point to fall out of the finals. But I really can't see that happen. I think they're being well coached. They have good shape. They attack well, and they finish their chances.
Yeah,
like that's basically what you want in this league.
Yeah, and of course Speckmeyer also helping their defending, because last year the ball went up and then it came straight back to them.
Yeah,
this
exactly.
Year, yeah, this year Speckmeyer it stays there and then it just relieves the pressure on. The
you don't have basically defenders doing shuttle runs.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
because I seem to remember a lot of late goals they conceded last season just fell off a little bit.
Yeah, which makes sense if you have to defend a lot, and especially because they are still a very young team. And then I think, finally, Western United won, Perth nil. So the Cats Smith era starting very nicely there. And Perth had a little bit of a disaster playing out from the back. That's all it took in the end. And a really nice Chloe Legazza goal on her birthday, no less, giving Western United the 3 points. So the defending premiers, I think, still, you know, as we said, there's plenty of games left. So, you know, they could still finish really high up on the table. But it's that time for me to read out some tweets that took my fancy. I really like this one from friend of the pod, Megan, because there was a game at Leichhardt Oval and then a game at Wanderers headquarters, colloquially known as Rudy Hill Turf Farm, the next day. So she just said, if Leichhardt Oval is the eighth wonder of the world, does that make Rudy Hill Turf Farm the eighth blunder of the world? Yes, let's move on. I've spent too much time there. And
it's only to your detriment.
It is, although during the NPL season, sometimes I have to go there, but yes, it is to my detriment. You are right. I am punishing myself, and sadly, I will continue to punish myself.
You're drinking poison and expecting everyone else to get sick, mate.
Yes, and I'll continue to do that. Also, I really like this one. A tweet of course, these are on the show notes. Someone screenshotted Mary Earp's TikTok, and it's basically people reading an article from the Times about Mary Earp's being named BBC Sports Person of the Year, while Mary Earps is next to them, wearing a hoodie and basically doing her best to disappear because out of embarrassment.
Yeah.
This is such as the price of fame. It's a very good video. And then my obligatory Tory Tumuth phrase, during the game between Sydney and Brisbane at Leichhardt, at Osnall's Gunnar tweets, Interact to join the Tory Tumuth fan club. And there's a reply from at Lauren AWFC. I was sitting on the right side during the second half and she was tearing it up. Everyone around me was so impressed. So this is what Lockie and I have been talking about for 5 years. It's good to see people are finally realizing. Now, Matilda's news. And one of those things that I think we were talking, it feels official, but actually isn't, at least not at the time of recording. Charlie Grant is really heavily rumored to be moving to Tottenham. And then another official move, Claire Polkinghorn has signed for Kristianstad, so she's moving from Witsel, but she is staying in Sweden, where Polks will continue to be a star of our Nordic raps. Firstly, discussing what we all think will happen, Charlie Grant to Spurs. It's kind of following the path set by Kara Cooney Cross, going from Sweden to the WSL. So as long as she gets game time, no reason why she shouldn't. Looks like a good move.
There is effectively the news is that she's reached an agreement to sign, but she hasn't signed. So, that will obviously be one of the first cabs off the rank when the January transfer window opens. Because obviously you've got to kind of having the transfer there is all well and good, but you've got to agree personal terms. My guess would have been that there probably would have been a few looking at her, considering that there has been. There's been so much football. There's so much football that's being played in Europe at the moment. But yeah, good sign. Spurs, decent club. They have relatively good facilities in terms of where they play the women's game. So I think, yeah, I hope she doesn't get suffer the same fate as Kaia Simon in terms of both injury and being frozen out, for want of a word, at the club. But yeah, she's played well enough to earn a big move. So good luck to her, I say.
Yeah, so yet another WSL Aussie to keep track of. Another one in North London, so she can be on.
She can be a St. Albans local.
Yes, it could be a St. Albans. And very much in the minority on North London Derby Day, with like her compatriots just glaring at her and giving her dirty looks. But hey, that's football. Also, Polks to Kristianstad. I mean, I think she seems to be happy in the Nordic countries, so why not stay there? I mean, if she's available, and you need a centre back, it's pretty much a no-brainer, I would have thought. Also, like, has jagged a couple of goals during her time in Sweden, so Amanda, like, making impact at both ends of the field. And keep an eye out in the new year, I think from March onwards, if memory serves me correctly, when the Swedish season and our Nordic Raps will resume, and then Stefan will be all over that stuff.
Yep.
And then also...
she'll be joining Amy Sayer there from memory as well.
She is, yep. Amy Sayer, College Matilda's fave, no less. Mm. Also, I mean, it's amazing. So much has happened by between the last pod and now. Deborah and Delhart was both announced and has played, made two appearances for Brisbane. So yeah, we feel a bit late, but this is the first chance we had to talk about it. And yeah, she wasn't getting off the bench of most games for HB Køge in Denmark. So she contract ended, she needed to move, and she was in the starting lineup tonight. So it's a good start, a promising start as she tries to get back into the Irish national team setup. Now, it's Megan's other tweet from this week, a friend of the pod, but basically, Western Sydney Wanderers have announced, because their game against Canberra could not be played in Bathurst due to the pitch not being ready, so now they've decided it's going to be Wanderers versus Jets instead. One slight problem, it's going to be on a Friday night in Bathurst. So the one of the few fixtures that could have a decent away following is now going to be a long way away from both fan bases on a Friday night. Whatever. I mean,
it's not making things really easy, is it?
Yeah.
Which is a punish. But you know, at least I guess it means that you would hope that the club would do, you know, something with the schools there or something like that. But yeah,
the only upside you can think of is, are they going big for, hey, Bathurst, this is your Friday night, come on, come out, and like that. Whether they are or not, I don't know.
I hope so.
I really hope they are, to make it like a real sort of end of the week. Come along, let's see some national level football in your backyard and make a night of it. So that's the hope. But yeah, I think it is still really poor, because it's a game that both of those teams' fan bases could be a fabulous getaway. Fantastic of tourism for Bathurst as well. You might get some people staying overnight if it had been like a Saturday night game instead. So, it's disappointing, but well, let's not. I'm going to try and not be cynical and hope that they are pumping it up with the local community.
Yeah, and obviously, I do have bias here because I used to do some work for the Wanderers Community Department. But in my experience, the Wanderers are actually good with engaging local schools. So, yep. And they generally do keep that front of mind. So fingers crossed. I hope you're right. I think you will be right there, Madge. Now, some other news. From @SheScoresBanger, FIFA news reports FIFA setting up a £200 million fund to support the professionalization of women's football and plan to reward clubs every time they sign under 23s. And I don't know if you two had the thought I had, which was, if that's the case, A-League women clubs are going to be rolling in cash like Scrooge McDuck in about 3 years.
It's going to be free money.
Yes, that's just like money for under 23s. Well, yeah. It's our league's dreams come true, basically.
Yeah, like, we're gonna be shipping players out to Europe, like, you know, they've stolen bread in 1790s.
This is a win-win for everyone, because we'll sign them when they're 15, get the money, and then the other teams can still sign them. They'll still be under 23.
FIFA hasn't thought this.
There's cash for the Wanderers when they sign the 17-year-olds, and then there's cash for Sydney FC when they sign those same players at the age of 19.
Are these players, like, are we now going to be looking at putting NPLW players on quote-unquote professional contracts so that they are now, you now have NPL clubs getting into this £200 million pool?
Oh, I hadn't even thought of that. Manly and I to do this. So
exactly. The players get paid, therefore they are professional.
I just got to hang on, and then hopefully there's some of that trickle down to me and I get a pay rise.
Exactly. Yes. Shades of sign-on fees. But yeah, any money is money. And in this case, I think the sport desperately needs it in terms of the women's side of the game. So we'll take it.
No.
I am. I feel bad that I read this and I thought it said for the personalization of women's football, and I thought it was just like FIFA are going to pay to have jerseys with names on the back of them. And I was very confused as to why Gianni Infantino wanted more money to be going to Eric for his ever-expanding personalized jersey collection.
Me and Lockie, and also yes. friend of the pod Simon, and a few other
yes,
Bonnie,
exactly.
Kieran Yap, just like, yeah, everyone. Oh, if only my ever-growing jersey collection could be subsidized, but oh well, that dream is possibly a bridge too far. But yeah, like, it would be great if A-League
never hurts to ask.
Yeah, it surely does not. And be great if our league could benefit from, you know, all the being part of the pathway for all the young talent we have in this country. Also, an interesting news item that I noticed, and you know, link in the show notes as always, a Guardian article about Paris FC. They're doing something different, offering free attendance for both their women's and men's teams. Of course, Dale off mic did put out, make the very good point. It's easy for them to do this when they have...
Yeah, they are owned by a billionaire and a state. So,
yeah, yes.
Look, it's
yes,
not...
Well.
It could be... It's. I think it's good. Good for them. I'm happy for you. Not necessarily the hardest thing to do, to be honest. But they, like... Paris FC play in Stade Charletti, which is like it's in the 13th, so it's in Paris. It's not like some of the other teams in like Red Star play just outside Paris, for example. And like they may only be getting, you know, 1,500, 2,000 people to women's games, but like that doesn't matter if you've got a team like this is a community team when you really think about it. Yes, the men play in League Two, and yes, the women are playing in the Champions League. But like this is, I guess you would say this is Paris's community or this, Southern Paris's community team. So, I think it should be applauded. They probably could have done it better, but like they're losing money to do this, so like I don't see any reason why it shouldn't be congratulated.
Yes. Now on to really, at least for this week, really the main point of this podcast, which is the news that Christy Mewis would be moving to West Ham, and all the jokes came out on Twitter. Nancy Gillen, only in women's football can we take from this information that Sam Kerr will be signing a new contract with Chelsea. Ah, yes. Of course, but in case you didn't know, Christy Mewis is engaged, the US international engaged to Sam Kerr. By the way,
great show.
Good evening, Emma. How are you?
Hello, I'm very good. And yes, Christy Mewis going to West Ham, great sign of sportsmanship.
Yeah, we're really big sportsmanship fans on this podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and looking forward to the sportsmanship derby. West Ham's, I think, US account tweeted it out. Oh my god, you have joined at just the right time. Like this is
wonderful.
Yes, this wonderful. Is as I was saying, this Christy Mewis to West Ham, basically the main reason I wanted to do the podcast, so we can make jokes about the move and the reaction. Also, I embedded my favorite tweets in the show notes. Find a girl that loves you enough to move to West Ham for you. Oh, wow. Another one, West Ham have one win, seven losses, and are tied at the bottom of the table with Bristol City. This is love. And my favorite one, want someone to love me so much they enter a relegation battle for me. Yep, that's really what we're all looking for. Who has anything else to add? Well, I just...
All I have to say is that I don't think Sam is winning any argument that they may have in the next foreseeable forever.
No. Yeah. I think Dina's going to be on her for a while.
Yeah.
Because anything that happens, she can just say, I went to relegation for you.
Yep.
And that's it. And that's
the
whole thing.
I moved to East London so that you could be happy. It's, Look, I mean, West Ham and Chelsea, traditional rivals as well, if you look back to the kind of 70s and 80s in English men's football, these two clubs do not like each other very much. But the beauty of women's football is that just doesn't transfer. It's a much more positive attitude. I'm sure there'll be much more positivity on the pitch in the tweets. It should be good. It's... it must, like, she was playing in New York as well, so it's not like she's, you know, leaving paradise to move to London. So she, you know, it'll be interesting to see how things go. I look forward to the content.
Oh yes, and early on, so in January, she one of her first games. I think they have a league game before this, but then there is an away Conti Cup game against Birmingham City. And if Christy Mewis plays in that, firstly, I hope someone records the look of confusion on her face when someone tries to explain the Conti Cup structure to her. But also the thought of Christy Mewis playing Conti Cup and West Ham will probably not make the quarterfinals. Just, oh dear. Well, I mean, is there any more romantic sentence in the English language than girl, I would play at the Chigwell Construction Stadium for you? I think not.
It's a perfect sentence, really. They play, I'm just having a look. They play Chelsea in the FA Cup on the 15th.
Oh, this is meant to be.
Yep. And then, as you say, they play Birmingham City, and God, she's going to have to go to Birmingham, which is a sentence that, it's being played at St. Andrews, which is a nice ground, but man alive, Birmingham is not the nicest place in the world. As you say, explaining the Conti Cup, explaining what people from Birmingham are saying, it's going to be a real learning experience.
Yes, then I wonder if she has any trips up north to like Manchester or Liverpool. That's more learning for Christy, just brutal. But yes, yeah. All part of the great cultural exchange of football. Now, I'll do
it'll be
pause
learning
it
for her. Sorry, it'll be learning for her, but it'll also be learning for everyone else because she is from Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Like she's.
Ooh.
Yeah, her family's from Boston. Oh,
she's,
close to
she's a masshole, as they say. Like, so it'll be very, yeah, very much a big cultural exchange.
Mm-hmm.
She's not just any American.
Yeah.
Yes, that is a very good point. Thanks for reminding us, Emma. Now, of course, we'll have to go back to something we already discussed, but because you've just come from Melbourne City versus Brisbane at Swan Street, of course, we do have to ask you for your own takes on the game. There was a lot that happened.
It started and it was a lot, and then it was basically 90 minutes of a lot, and then Emina Ekic was there and she just was doing whatever she wanted whenever she wanted, and then there were 8 goals somehow. It just, for like a certain period of time, it felt like every single ball that City played was like actively working against them,
Oof.
Which was like, it was kind of impressive to see. But yeah, Brisbane came out really hard and really fast and it paid off for them really well. And then they just kind of just like sunk. Like it was like a, it went up and up and up and up and just imploded. It was crazy. And then, it was crazy. It probably could have gotten to like a 5-all draw. Yeah. There could have been like any number of extra goals in there because there were so many chances and just so many missed opportunities. It was really fun to watch, but it was also just deranged.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems the men's have also taken a leaf out of the women's book in being insane because the men's derby that I was leaving is now 8-1 to City.
What? Oh,
I'm so sorry.
I looked before and I saw it was 6-1 and I was like, oh, it's just gotten worse. Okay.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
I...
But whatever's going on up there, no good. Just no good.
A lot happening.
Yo. So much.
That's
so much. That's like 17 goals in like 6 hours.
Well, yeah. Whoever's working the PA is gonna be, you know, on the strepsels this evening.
Mm-hmm.
And
I've just had a look at that. That was that's a game of football.
That's the commentators as well. Like, yeah, just that reminds me of the time I called a futsal grand final, which was 10-6 with a red card, and my throat went, and I was like, well, of course it did. What do you expect? Oh, dear.
Actually, the only good thing about it is that it will keep the trolls off of the women's posts.
Yes.
They'll be too busy complaining about the men losing. There's the plus side.
Yes.
I love that. There's always a silver lining.
Yeah.
And you have just found it so expertly.
Yes.
Oh, I like that take. It's like, and also men's football is kind of like, as kind of like the human shield for women's football. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fine, but that's
we'll take it when it's there.
Yeah. Sometimes it's like that, needed.
That meme where it's like that stupid cartoon of like a soldier with his like
holding
their arms out and getting like shot from behind.
I was going with the trolley problem.
yeah, that works too. That works too.
Unfortunately, the men's team are getting run over by a tram. So ooh, sorry about that.
Yes. Yes. Now, yes, there was, so next up on our list, we're trying to restore sanity here. If there was one final round of Champions League before Christmas, again, don't know why they make them play 3 or 4 days before Christmas. Great scheduling, as you'll always. But I suppose the main takeaway, Real Madrid are out, which is very amusing. But also, Chelsea now top of the group after getting a little bit of revenge on Ivy Lewis Beaker Hecken, after they didn't get the draw with, after Hecken got a draw with them at Stamford Bridge the week before. And then I think earlier, imagine Emma and I were talking about every game should be played in good weather this round. So everyone should be played in Spain or Portugal. Well, Lyon will be wishing that was the case because they traveled to Norway only to bottle it in stoppage time against Brann Kvinna, Larissa Crummer's team. And I saw the footage, it was in the snow, and oh, that would have been miserable, but
yeah,
yes. Anyway, so also Claire Hunt's PSG, so Claire Hunt on the winning side. Yeah, I remember her playing for Sydney University. This is still wild to me that she's playing in the Champions League. Good for her. Also, a bit of sad news. Slavia Prague versus St. Poulton, Ella Mastrantonio's team, postponed to Wednesday, 18th of January, after a shooting in Prague, which is our thoughts and prayers to everyone affected by that. Now, that's, I think, the last of the, shall we say, breaking news or the current stuff. Now it's, I think, time for a look back, because this is the last pod of 2023. And firstly, I'll point out to an article I've linked to in the show notes called by Beyond 90 alumnus, Marissa Lordanik of ESPN, just looking back on the Matildas World Cup run, just how they became so massive and the Matildas were everywhere. And we just wish it was like that all the time. Highly recommend you read that article if you haven't already. Now, just in case Emma hasn't had time to think of her World Cup memories, I did ask the rest of you for one World Cup memory and one non-World Cup memory, because if I didn't set a rule, everyone would just have picked the World Cup. So I wanted a bit of variety. But Madge, you can go first with your memories. I liked it when you told me what they were.
Well, I might be slightly stealing someone else's, but I'm going to be very specific here in that as far as the games are concerned, in the penalty shootout against France, Mackenzie Arnold saving the retake of the disallowed save was the moment for me. It was like, it just made me feel better. I felt it was all against us up to that point. We had opportunities to win. Then that happened and it was like, oh my God. But then when she was able to save the retake, it was just like, oh, this feels good. This is epic. And it continued on from that. So that was a great sort of probably the best in-game moment for me. As I was just, I know other people were like crying and stuff around me, but I was just like death stare the entire penalty shootout. So everyone reacts differently, but it worked out for one of the best football moments that I think we've ever had. As women's football fans in this country. And then also the same game, but beforehand, from a fan point of view, the march that we did from the Lord Alfred down Caxton Street before that game was just amazing. It was everyone who saw us as we were starting the march joined in behind. We've got pictures of basically down in front of, like just before you get to the stadium, the entirety of Caxton Street was just a sea of green and gold, of people walking behind the drums for the march up to the stadium. And I think that was probably the most epic fan experience that I've had with Matilda's Active, being able to just get that sea of green and gold, sort of encapsulating that. I don't care if we call it a bandwagon, just everyone being on board with the Matildas in the lead up to that game was, yeah, absolutely the most epic fan moment for me as well. Are we doing World Cup ones first? Are we going
to
circle
back? Oh, yeah, we could do the World Cup ones. We'll come back to your non-World Cup one. But, yeah, I think just to break it up a bit, I mean, mine is really predictable, but I got to watch the Republic of Ireland team three times. We didn't win, 1 point, only one goal, but what a goal it was from Katie McCabe. And I was right behind it when it happened, watching it swing into the net. And, yeah, it's just like that now, watching an Ireland home game, that's got to be on the bucket list, or who knows, maybe fingers crossed they make Euro 2025 or World Cup 2027, and then I could spend a lot of money watching the girls in green play again. And Emma, have you thought of yours?
I think my top World Cup memory, or like my top moment from the World Cup, it's going to sound insane when I say it, but the first game, Australia Ireland, I was in the media because I had my media access through the internship I did. I was up in the media room, and obviously everyone's there. It's like buzzing in that room because, you know, the World Cup's about to start in Australia, at least, because it already kicked off in New Zealand. But the moment that everyone, because all the photographers and all the journos are up like in this one room together, and the moment the team sheets dropped and everyone saw that Sam wasn't on the lineup, you could hear a pin drop in that room. That was insane. Everyone just went completely silent. And then you just hear all of these keyboards going off because everyone's going crazy trying to be the first one to like tweet it or post it or whatever. So that was insane to me. Not football related at all, but that was insane, that moment. If you were looking for an actual footballing moment, the first thing that comes to mind is that free kick that was taken by Marta Cox.
Oh, yeah.
Panama against France.
Yes.
I think it was.
Yeah.
That goal was insane.
Yeah.
So that would be, yeah. And just her reaction after scoring that goal as well. Like, you could, like, the World Cup is everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that really was one of those moments. So it was incredible to see that goal. I wasn't there in person, but just, yeah, seeing it was unreal.
I was there in person, can vouch for it. It is an excellent choice. Now, Dale, your favorite memory from the World Cup?
I think it's obviously hard to nail it down. Ev Parisset being brought on to take a penalty and then missing that penalty in the France shootout was very good. but I think the one thing that, I mean, that, like, that was the game, that day in Brisbane was fantastic. From, I walked down from Paddington down towards Cactus Street and down to Lang Park. But I think seeing the Matildas bus drive down Caxton Street and watching people come out of the pubs to applaud and wave them good luck, I think that will stay with me for a long time. But I think my moment of the World Cup was Sam Kerr's goal against England. I don't think that I've heard a noise like that at a women's sporting event, let alone a sporting event in Australia. And yeah, I mean, it was, it may not have been the goal of the tournament, but it was a very, very good goal, and it was an incredible moment. And I think it was that moment that we thought that we could go on and do it. And obviously we didn't go on and do it, but in fairness, neither did England. So,
well, that's the main.
We were both losers on the day, which is the best, the best outcome. But yeah, I mean, Kerr's goal was like, what a moment to have been there to witness that in person was an absolute pleasure. And yeah, still got to put all my World Cup stuff up, but that'll get done hopefully in the new year.
Yeah, and something Marissa mentions in her article, looking back on the Matildas World Cup run. I mean, it was only 8 minutes, but we felt amazing for those 8 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we're trying to chase as football fans.
Mm.
And so, yeah, on to our non Women's World Cup memory. So back to Madge, I like your choices for this as well.
Yeah, so I'm probably a little broader. I think it's just been great seeing some of, especially the younger players, earn big overseas contracts. So, I mean, the big one being sort of Claire Hunt after her amazing rise into the Matildas, a fabulous World Cup, and then going to PSG. But, I mean, players like Sarah Hunter, Charlie Rule, Mackenzie Hawksby, just sort of, I think we're just really seeing the fruition of the professionalism of the game worldwide, and hopefully locally we can continue to build those pathways for players who have that talent to really kick on, that our local league provides a platform for them to shine here and, you know, be seen as a great hotbed of talent for teams to pick up players. Yeah, so it's just been wonderful to see those players, especially not being frontline Matildas. So I think we've had that sort of first wave of a lot of players who are seen across the world because they were Matildas. Mm. So I think that's been really great. And then my other one's also just Western United having a great debut season, making it sort of, you know, to the grand final in their first season. I don't think anyone would have predicted that when they came into the league. So seeing a club sort of, you know, just really commit and put, you know, resources and planning into their dub team, really having great results, I think is fabulous. And it was a great example to, you know, what can be done with some, you know, dedication behind the scenes. And yeah, just congrats to them. I think it was a great fairy tale. Not quite the full fairy tale for them, but a wonderful debut season for a new team coming into the league.
Yeah, I've mentioned this before in the pod, I think. There was an article, I can't remember who wrote it, but Western United were planning so well for this. They planned before they were 100% officially entered into it with their feeder club, Calder United. Down to Calder United playing midweek away games, away friendlies in Tasmania to get those players used to the rigors of interstate away games. So yeah, they deserve all the success they got. My non-Women's World Cup memory, predictable and local as well. So it was my employer, Manly United, winning 6 games in 1 day against Gladesville Ravens. It was kind of a difficult season. We were closer to the relegation battle than we would have liked in seniors, but, you know, to win all 6 games in 1 day, by the way, I mean, we're not supposed to talk about SAP results. We won all of those as well. So, but it felt great, especially watching us seal the win in first grade. And yeah, 6 out of 6, because remember, kids, you can't spell Gladesville Ravens Football Club without 6 L's. Anyway, Emma, what's your non-Women's World Cup memory?
I'll go.
She's first. Yeah, okay, yep. Yeah, don't go first.
Oh dear. Sorry, I'm back the time. Yeah, go for it.
My two would be the Sydney Derby at the start of this season. Mm. Getting 11,000 to a women's football match domestically in this country has been, you know, is wild. I don't think there's many other ways to put it. It was absolutely unheard of before the tournament, and for the league to have capitalized, and for Sydney to have capitalized as well as they have. I mean, even after losing so many players like overseas in the last few years, the league is still able to draw such a crowd, and things are still going strong in terms of the crowd figures at Sydney. I know that much. They're averaging about 3,500 this year, which is still quite impressive. And outside of the dub, Lena Karmas winning an MPLW grand final with her last kick for MacArthur. She's now signed for Mount Druitt Town. So scored 2 goals in the NPLW grand final for MacArthur this year. And yeah, she'd been at the club for donkey's years, and it was what a way to go out, I say.
Love, great shout for Lena Combs. I cannot wait to see her play in the New South Wales Second Division for Mount Druitt.
Yeah, it's gonna be crazy. She's just gonna annoy a lot of people.
Oh yes, that's guaranteed. Emma,
I was checking the date and then the date was wrong, but I changed my mind. Anyway, my favorite moment that is it's technically not World Cup related, but the send-off game against France and having just all of those people and going to that match knowing that the next game that the Matildas played was going to be in front of 75,000 people. Mm-hmm. Unreal. Going from when I first started following women's football and the first sort of the first big games I went to, there was 4,000 people at a W League final. And then all of a sudden, 6, 7 years later, there's nearly 50 something thousand in Marvel Stadium. That was it was crazy seeing that. So that one's probably my non World Cup memory. Yeah. And Mary's goal in that game was killer too. So
I loved her movement. You don't always have to run full speed. She was just drifting and waiting, just realizing she was moving with the pocket of space, and she just got the ball and slammed it home. And a bit slow, it just occurred to me, France started their time down here by losing to us, and they ended it by also losing to us. And they lost the send-off game on Bastille Day as well. So it's just, I will not apologize to any French listeners we have. If you're French, that's your own fault. Now,
I would say they are the one nationality that cannot claim to be annoyed when people make fun of them. I think that is okay.
Yep. Okay. Thanks for the enabling, Dale. Really appreciate it as always. Now, time to wrap this up. Time for the final Queens, Kings, and Emperors for the week. For 2023. So Madge, I think we briefly referred to your queen earlier, but I mean, it's always worth talking about a story like this, isn't it?
Yeah, I just love seeing legends come back from ACL injuries. So a big shout out to Marielle Ecker, who played her first game in pretty much a year. I'm not 100, it was a 300 and something days.
367 days, they said on the broadcast.
Yeah, so pretty much the full year that is, sometimes sort of in the middle of sort of what you want from an ACL recovery, but wonderful to have her back. She's such an exciting, fun player. And but she's been sort of behind the scenes with the team and just being a wonderful team player. But it's great to see her back out on the pitch and doing what she does best.
Yep. We've spoken a lot about how we need to do something about all these ACL injuries, or even just evolve the knee so that it actually makes sense as a joint. But we do. In the meantime, we will always love talking about these stories of players recovering from ACL injuries. Dale, I very briefly alluded to your one earlier, but now's the time to really talk about your
situation. Oh, yeah. Gaetan Tini scoring a Panenka to knock Real Madrid out of the Champions League. Tough scenes for all involved. Fantastically taken. The commentator was as surprised as everyone else, I think. But yeah, beautifully taken penalty. I think Tine is 37, so she's kind of in the twilight of her career, but she's been such a good player for all of these years in France and for France. And yeah, that was one hell of a way to win a match. We love to see that.
It was, my God. The Panenka, I've embedded it in the show notes, but it was slow enough for the keeper to realize that they'd been chipped. And I think the effects might even pick up someone's shout of frustration. It's a work of art.
Yeah, as a goalkeeper myself, there is no worse feeling than knowing that you're going to concede as you concede. I conceded a penalty this year by diving the wrong way, and watching the ball go into the net on the other side of the goal is not a fun feeling. I can confirm.
Yeah, well, at 37, Gaetan Tine still making people feel bad about themselves. Well, That's what you want to be when you're a footballer. Now, Emma, who have you chosen for this week?
Mine, really, really late steal for this one. Amina Ekic with 4 goal involvements. So a hat trick, and then she assisted Wilkinson's goal. So absolutely her. She just absolutely sends players to the shops multiple times in a game, and it's always fun to watch. And she's just so clever and deliberate on the ball that it's just excellent getting to watch her play. I was at the game, I was saying to someone that any neutral at that game, if they were leaving not obsessed with her, they were wrong. Amina Ekic, for sure.
Yeah, and it's only today I learned she is now used the grandparent rule to play for Bosnia and Herzegovina. Mm-hmm. So, and that allowed me to use the phrase center defender for Burek in commentary. And I love it when things work out like that. But she's sending people the wrong way. Like, it is like being some of these defenders, it's like being sent the wrong way from the penalty spot. But she's in great form. And scored the goal in the derby, so that's 5 goal involvements in a week for Amina Ekic. And my queen of the week, shout out to her again, Marissa Lordanik. And she's done one of those earnest end of year threads, but I really like the one she's done, which is, I'll put in the notes for you. Basically, she's gone from being a young woman with a dream to being a woman living the dream. So she talks about use as a kid handwriting English Premier League match reports. Before this year, she'd only been on 2 flights in her entire life. And during, she worked the World Cup living a dream, and she went on so many flights, and she did so many wonderful things, both for ESPN covering, I think, the biggest show in football we'll ever see in our lives. So, and a lot more besides, of course, doing wonderful work with The Far Post, a podcast we're all very fond of. But yeah, just, well, we've talked a lot. There's not enough women in sports media, but Marissa doing her best to be that representation. You can't be what you can't see and all that. And of course, she's very young, so there's a lot more to come from Marissa. We hope it all goes well for her at ESPN and wherever she works in the future. Now, is that it? Is it time to wrap up? Yep, good. So that's it. That's the final Beyond 90 podcast for 2023. On behalf of Majelica, Dell Roots, and Emma Burke, thanks for joining us. Thanks for rushing back from Amy Park and joining us. But yeah, this is Eric Subihana signing off for episode 179 of the Beyond 90 podcast. Take care. Wishing you plenty of good vibes, great coffee, sick tattoos and razzlers, and may your footballing dreams come true in whatever way you dream them up. See you next time.